This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me...
Derm Buchanan.
And I'm Stuart Lurks. Okay, now Derm, you trained in hospital chaplaincy and hospital chaplaincy training in the United States.
That's right, yes. The model of training was clinical pastoral education, which pays a great deal of attention, or teaches its trainees to pay a great deal of attention to the human story behind persons who may have some kind of disorder. It can be sickness, it can be sickness brought on through, say, in a general hospital or some kind of surgical condition, or it can be in a psychiatric hospital, where I spent really most of my training in the States, where people had been pressed down by some authority figure or figures which had said to the person, you are a bad person, you are a very wicked person because of whatever, and generally they became thoroughly depressed or fearful or plainly really disordered. And until they found somebody that they could share that with, and it had to sometimes be literally intense listening by really getting down to what a person was feeling rather than what they said they thought, a sort of superficial.
So they didn't necessarily understand that that's what was driving that.
So you could say, but what are you feeling about that? Person could say, well, ever since the death of my wife, whatever it was, 5 years ago, I should be over it by now, etc. Or something that they've done or been in trouble with the law or with their family, and so-and-so has never spoken to me since. But that's all right. I mean, I understand that. That's where... a trained person might say, but what are you feeling about that? What do you mean, what am I feeling? What are you actually feeling about that? Oh, well, and then they'll start to unpack that, what they are feeling, which is devastated or whatever, and this will lead on to other things. And so beyond that lies disorders, migraines, and all manner of things. And so we were trained to try and hunt that out. But anyway, at the end of a career, at the end of a section of this career, I've sort of swung round to thinking what's going on in society, because it seems so much is happening. The family life as we knew it, and I know that it was never perfect, I suppose, but now there seems to be so many... I think it's very worrying. First of all, on a external value, when you see what we've done, for example, with the Brexit thing, which I don't fully understand at this point, and I haven't found anybody really that is fully conversant with it. People blame Donald Trump for many things that he said and does, some of which is, I mean, it's a fair comment. Other things, he's appealing to a certain attitude which is in any society. Others would say he's given them jobs, they've got money that they didn't have before. One thing I was aware of when I was working in the States myself people valued their jobs in a way which at the time, 1970s, at the time New Zealanders were sort of less keen on their job and so on, whereas a lot of Americans were jolly glad to have a job.
So they were lucky. They thought they were lucky to have a job, or their identity was defined by that job.
Well, the very fact that they had a job defined their being. I remember a person working with me on the course I was on, his family saying, the mother and the father saying that Bobby, that's the name of their son, had a job. And finally, they were really, really quite excited about this. And so I remember saying to them, what sort of a job's he got? Well, he's pumping gas, which meant he was filling cars with petrol.
Yeah.
Now, they thought that was absolutely wonderful. But I could think of a lot of people at the time said, well, he's only working on the Caltex station. Not much of a job. But they saw it quite differently, so they valued their jobs, and in a way, they seemed to value their family life. And ever since then, I've often thought that, you know, there's a lot of things going on in our society which, you know, some of the current legislation going through Parliament, the effect or the unintended effect it's going to have on families or particularly children. And
what sort of things in particular?
Well, we've got, you know, a lot of kids at school which one keeps hearing about children being disturbed at school, a lot of kids worried about the fact their families are split up and they're living with families on the more I used to be a supervisor for relationship services, that's the old marriage guidance in Taupo before I came back to Palmerston North, and all the counsellors, just about all the counsellors, were dealing with situations where children were really in a bad place because of family split-ups, of partners that bashed. Violence was commonplace. Not only physical violence by beating people up with a piece of wood or whatever, but verbal violence of all kinds. Now, this wasn't just a handful of cases. This was widespread in certain parts of the community where I was working around, Mangakino, Tokoroa, and Taupo.
Is this something that's grown? Because I know they talked about unemployment and crime, and then they said, but in the recession in the 1930s, there wasn't a lot of crime. So,
well, it seems like the very family life, or the one place you can go to be yourself, you can't be yourself because there's all sorts of other stuff going on in the form of, as I say, violence.
Yeah.
Of one kind or another. And this is growing, and we've got a situation now as we speak where people are concerned about the rate of suicide, which is actually increasing, I believe. And that's a terrible state of affairs where there's always been individuals, and I know that from my work and studies in the States, but there's always been somebody that suicide. But what we've got is a sort of an epidemic, or so we're told. And that's a terrible state of affairs, and there's something badly wrong. So, but if you're looking further afield, there's a great deal of unrest right across the communities as we know it, in one form or another. And you don't
growing inequality they talk about,
which it's yeah, they say they're unequal, they say, people say they're not equal, people are really saying I'm not valued, and the other flip side of this is it's very difficult nowadays to get people to do things in the community. because they are too busy or too something or other. And it seems, I mean, I can recall a time when I was growing up, most people that I knew about or knew of were all doing things in the community, on this committee, on another committee. Somebody was secretary of something or other, and so on. Now it's only older people, not only older people, but it's more particularly older people.
Now with couples, you've got both are likely to be working.
Both are likely to be working.
More employees rather than self-employed.
The whole thing is, and it's largely being ignored by the political world. They're just trying to... but people seem to be more, what do I get out of this? Not what can I do for my community or society. It's what can I get out of this? And we seem to be... And then, of course, if they're struggling, the person that says that, what can I get out of it, and finds they're not getting very much out of it, then they, because there's a loss of hope, or loss of drive, a loss of hope, and then, of course, we've got major problems.
Do you find there's a difference between, say, the church communities and the non-church community with that?
Well, there is a difference. I'm not sure that the difference is... it varies a bit from congregation to congregation, I think. And certainly I'm a bit disappointed that the churches as a group have said very little about some of the major social issues before us right now. The issues of termination of pregnancy, euthanasia, and a whole lot of others, and allied subjects. I can't remember hearing anything from our church leaders on any of these subjects. Maybe they are, and I'm just not hearing it, or the media are not picking it up, but seems
it might be behind the scenes, or do they feel that there should be a distinction between church and state, so they're looking at the people's spiritual
well-being?
That's traditional, that's a view
that some would have, but they in the past they've made comments, and the community doesn't have to pick it up.
You do have the Destiny Church that's being
and they tend to be a more evangelical, Pentecostal sort of grouping. So
their media coverage might put other churches off, do you think?
I'm not aware that it's done it yet, so...
Put other churches... Other churches might say, well, we don't want to be...
They may feel that they're going to be tired with that sort of brush.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's a point of view, and that may be valid. Or it may be that they just, for whatever reason, feel that they shouldn't get involved. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure what they're... And I can't speak for all of them, of course.
Yeah.
To what they're saying to their own congregations, I don't know. But it seems to me it wouldn't hurt to hear it occasionally, even if the person gets shot down because...
Yeah.
They're out of order because people are looking for sense of direction.
There used to be sort of prominent church people who would stand
up and
talk, but there's been a change generally in the role of church in New Zealand society, haven't there?
Well, I think it's become less, I think many people would think it's irrelevant, the influence of churches, and they say so. That's where we've got to. And the characters that have spoken up in the past haven't always had an easy ride of it. But there we go.
Now, who was it? There was someone at Fendleton in Christchurch.
Bob Lowe.
Was it Bob Lowe?
Yeah, it was on television. He was a sort of a. An interesting fellow. Everybody clamoured to have him. I think he was mad on Was it cricket or football, rugby?
Might have been,
I don't know. He was a bit of a sports, yeah. And yes, and there still are characters like that, that everybody wants them to be master of ceremonies at their daughter's wedding, certainly take funerals, etc., etc. And there are, I'm not sure that that's who we necessarily want to be, but I know who the know the sort of personality you mentioned that they at everything and spoke about this or that.
Mm.
But yes, I know. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think. There's been one or two church or religion based groups that focus on social issues. Can't quite remember the name. There's one that was in Auckland, wrote quite a few reports that I think began with M or something.
Well, there's always been individuals that have said the odd individual, but if they spoke as they very give me the impression of being frightened of being the public will sort of criticise them because they shouldn't get involved because they're talking about other people's business and
personality labelled
and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that. Whether that's a factor, whether it's a dominant factor, I'm not sure. But it is a fact.
Yeah. I suppose that there's important political interest groups or lobby groups that tend to be secular and would fight back at any
point. Oh, well, they would, of course. But if they're fighting back hard, say, that means that the point's gone home.
Yes.
And they're signalling that it's their opinion counts.
Yeah.
So they try to discount it and destroy it.
Yeah.
If they ignore it, well, that's that. But if a church leader said something about a particular issue, and then the other party sort of really attack them back, that means that the point's been taken.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I'm not. Yeah, so that's. However, it's not. I don't think it's going to be much of an issue.
No, I think that. Yeah, but the role of religion in New Zealand society has sort of changed quite.
It has done, and what seems to have done, to a point where it's largely. I mean, the term religious, I notice that it's cropped up a lot when they're talking about issues, say, abortion, euthanasia, and to name just two. Not quite the same with drugs, I don't think, but it's cropped up in a way which they really think, well, if you're religious, you're automatically against all kind of form of enjoyment. Sort of attitude,
or at least that could be the good rhetoric to counter anything coming from
that's right.
So your involvement in there, you came back from the States,
right?
And then what?
Well, I came back from the States and then was involved with the Interchurch Council on Hospital Chaplaincy. Now, they were a body, it's an ecumenical group, which was set up by the churches, and they, in the days of, I think it was the national government with Lance Adam Snyder, which would be in the 1970s, responded to their church's request for some funding for hospital chaplains. Because they were part of the total health healing team. And the then government of the day said that's fair enough and granted them a sum of money. I can't remember the actual figure, but it was flowing. By the time I came back to New Zealand, this was going, and my job was to see the church as part of the agreement for receiving that money means that they would guarantee that chaplains were trained. We're talking about that CPE model I was talking about, and that they were trained and supervised on their day-to-day work. So that it was when we're talking about supervision, I'm not talking about somebody with a clipboard ticking off or. Yeah.
It's
backup, really.
Yeah, yeah.
If you get in a sticky situation, you've got somewhere to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And my job was to see that that was running smoothly. However, when the quite early in the piece of my taking up the job, the government of the day went into this population-based funding formula, and we found that the money that, or the lump sum that the then health department were paying to the joint churches was then going to be, we had to negotiate with each individual hospital group. But they wouldn't tell us who they were, what the amounts were, and so it was my job to go around them all, find out what we were going to get, if anything. In the event, it all came out much the same, and my job was I had to travel, go to visit with just about every hospital board.
All the district health boards.
There was area health boards.
All the different restructurings.
Regional health,
you would have had to renegotiate.
Regional health authorities and Crown Health Enterprises were three different groups.
Mm.
I found they were pretty good and were quite happy to tell us. But the government of the health department said, we can't tell you what it is. You've got to find out for yourself. So who has to go and do that? That was me. So I had to leave off some of the training stuff and really concentrate on the negotiating survival, and which I found interesting. And they were all, except with one exception, pretty easy, pretty good to deal with, actually. And more than happy to say how much that they'd noticed in their inflow from whichever RHA or Crown Health Enterprise, how much of it was to be used for chaplains. Most of them didn't know what chaplains did.
Okay, yeah.
And only one or two knew. They knew, they'd seen chaplains, no idea what the church is.
A hospital chaplain. A chaplain in general.
A chaplain in general or hospital.
Okay.
Didn't know what they did.
Says
no
something
idea.
About how secular New Zealand has become.
No idea.
Yeah.
Okay. No idea.
Yeah.
And so, well, what do they do? And when you had an opportunity to talk with them about it and explain it, they didn't say you should get more money, they were thinking they got pretty good value, and so that was that. But that was a pretty demanding sort of role for a while, because I was on the road pretty much continually. Yeah.
So roughly how many hospital chaplains would there be?
I don't know today, because I'm right out of it at the moment. There were about 60 or 70, something like that,
So is that sort of one or two in each major hospital?
No, they didn't all have chaplains.
Okay.
So that was spread out from from Auckland. There's nothing north of Auckland. Oh, no, I'm wrong. Whangarei. From Whangarei to Invercargill. And some of them had more than others. Groups around the bigger hospitals. Around Auckland, obviously, there's a number of hospitals. They just about all had, at least the major hospitals, not the private hospitals. So chaplains tended to cover those from some other base hospital. But Waikato was...
So it would be a hospital chaplain, someone trained in that, who would be going to the hospitals rather than just a normal...
There you go, that's right. That was that was the theory.
Yeah, yeah.
And, so that's... But places like Te Kawhiti or Tai Happy didn't have, although they've got quite Tamranui, it's got quite a, you know, they've got quite a sizable little hospital, but they didn't have a, they would be serviced normally by some of the parish, which would be called in a particular, they wouldn't have had a chaplain on duty, so to speak. Yeah. No. But there's certainly the bigger hospitals like Waikato, Wellington, New Plymouth, Napier, that's Palmerston North, of course. Okay. Yeah.
So what about other religions? Would you work with someone from
If a patient was of some particular persuasion and said, I want to see the representative.
Yeah, the rabbi or the... Rabbi.
Yeah. Well, we would automatically...
You'd get one.
And that worked pretty well. There was never any... The ICHC, which we were talking about, consisted of Anglican, Methodist, Presbyterian, Baptist, Roman Catholic, Church... How many is that, I think? Anyway, they were the main churches, Baptists I mentioned. The mainstream churches. Other groups, Salvation Army, they didn't really want to be involved. Or not in my day, anyway.
Okay. Because you think they'd be concerned with those who had...
Well, they... Probably not so much. I don't know why they didn't. They sort of... They were interested, but they never... Certainly not at the time I was there.
Yeah.
They didn't really want to be... caught up in that. Others felt that some years in a seminary or in some other setting were sufficient and objected to the training. And in some cases that was, you know, you could have looked at that seriously, but in the main they all used to come back and say they should have done it years ago.
Well, the specialist training that you would have gone So did you feel it was a shame that you'd had all the specialist training and then you were put into administration?
Well, I used to think that at times, but I was able to use it afterwards when I left there.
Yeah.
And we ended up doing some work for the marriage guidance or relationship services, Taupo sexual assault group, and settings like that, so I was able to use and some of it was private stuff, so I was able to put it to good use.
And you felt it was worthwhile as a specialisation?
I went into it voluntarily. It's sort of the further you went the more you wanted to sort of do. So it was very fulfilling, really.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.